this seance was recorded on the 31st of October, 1966. Medium Leslie Flint.
Yeah?
And what can I do for you?
Well, I don't know. Have you got many visitors here today?
Well, yes, quite a few, including your husband.
Oh, good. I'm so glad he's here. He never disappoints me, does he?
No, he's a good man.
Yes.
I reckon you must miss him terrible.
Well, I've kept so closely in touch with him through you. I haven't missed him so much. I feel I have him still.
He was older than you, wasn't he?
Yes.
Was he in his 80s?
No. Not quite.
Well, he's young now, of course. There's nothing old now.
No.
But I think he must have been older than you.
Yes.
You was his right hand, weren't you?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I think he depended a lot on you.
Well, I depended on him, too.
He certainly changed a lot of his ideas, though. My goodness me. He wouldn't have approved of this, would he?
No, I don't think he would, although latterly he was changing a little.
What are you saying about me?
Ah, hello, dear.
I thought I heard my name mentioned, and I presume you're talking about me.
Yes, I said that you changed your ideas a little before passing, didn't you, really?
Oh, I think possibly that's true.
Yes.
I did, yes. In certain respects, I changed my ideas a bit. I perhaps wasn't quite so narrow, shall we put it like that?
Yes, you are reading quite a number of books that are rather different.
Had you something in mind today that you particularly wanted me to discuss?
Well, have you anything special you feel you want to say?
Well, I suppose really there are lots of things. The thing is to know how to put them into words.
Well, I'm very thrilled with your incarnations, of course. I suppose you can't remember as far back as that one in China.
That, I must admit, is a long time ago.
It is, isn't it? Yes.
One.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, the Chinese dynasty, of which we were participants, is so remote in time, such an early one. And, of course, I suppose, really, looking back, as far as I've been able to gather, it must have been probably our earliest incarnation. There may have been others earlier. If so, I have no recollection.
Yes.
Although I can't speak at this stage anyway from first-hand remembrances, but I have been told that we had an incarnation in what is generally termed today by the students Atlantis.
Oh, I see. Yes, on Atlantis. Yes, I've been told that too.
Long time back.
Yes, of course.
I have no remembrance, recollection of it whatsoever. But should I, at some later date, find any details or anything that I can enlighten you concerning it, I will.
Yes, that would be very interesting. How does a spirit select a body for incarnation?
Well, there again, I don't think one can actually say that an entity or a spirit on this side selects a body as such, because the body, in a sense, is not there to select. What one, I suppose, should say is that one selects the environment and the parentage. This may sound very odd, but I think we have to clarify a lot when we talk about incarnations, and we have to try and clarify this business, particularly of birth and how we are born, and of course why we are reborn. In the first instance, of course, we must understand that although we are individuals in a sense, that is, that we have separate personalities, and we have built up certain characteristics, and we have become, to some extent, individual, we are all fundamentally of the same spirit. And when we feel the need, as one has done in the past, to return to Earth, we have to decide, or at least we have to come to some idea as to what would probably be the best environment or condition under which we were born. For instance, if one felt that it was necessary to know poverty and suffering and struggle, then one would obviously choose parents who were, by their very circumstances, impoverished. There'd be no point in choosing parents of high birth, nobility, and plenty of the world's goods. You see, so, and then again, you see, the body as such, that is the physical body, is not necessarily even brought into being. It's not even possibly even, the seed is not even sown. And sometimes it's very necessary to decide where and how and under what circumstances we shall come into the world. And also race comes into it.
Yeah.
One doesn't necessarily, because one has had an English incarnation, and the next time one feels a need to return, decide to come back through the parentage of English people. One may decide, for instance, to go into a Chinese or a Japanese connection. One may feel that it's very necessary to know what it must be like under certain circumstances in another country at another period of time. We see nationalities in themselves, although they are important in the general aspect of things as we see it with our larger viewpoint, they are not so important. But
yeah.
The point is, on a material basis, they are. And also, if one wants to have to experience certain things, or indeed not only to experience things, if one wishes to achieve or attempt to achieve a certain work of a spiritual nature, or some work which will elevate, if possible, of course, the whole world, but particularly one's own, this particular nation which one has chosen. For instance, many of the great teachers and prophets of old are old souls, but they've chosen to return at different times into different nationalities. That's why you do have, of course, the general thread, the same thread running through many of the great teachers and prophets of different nationalities. The main structure is there, the main foundation is there.
Yes.
You see, a lot of people say, oh, well, of course, some of the teachings of Buddha are very akin, for instance, to the teachings of the Christ, or many of the teachings of the Christ are not exactly dissimilar to Muhammad and so on. Well, of course, all these great teachers are quite often of the same spirit. Now, by that, I do not mean they are the same individual, which is quite a different thing.
Yeah.
Because there's such a thing of which possibly people on Earth have no realization. Not only of the universal spirit, but of the group spirit.
Yes.
And there are many of these great prophets and teachers who are of the same group, who come from a very, very high sphere, a very advanced stage of being, and have at different periods in history chosen to return under a different guise. In Bering, you'll find that all the great teachers and all the great prophets, without exception, are born of low parentage, where everything material seems to be against them. In other words, that they are never, I do not think there is one instance where the parentage has been of noble or high birth, where there has been every material opportunity given. Invariably, I'm sure in every case, you'll find that the birth has been in the lowest strata, so-called, of material life.
Yes. to make, of course, everything as hard as possible.
Not only that, there are many factors, of course, so many different factors, and one can only repeat several, perhaps, but the point is that it would never do. For instance, you take the child that is born in good parentage, so-called good parentage, sent to the best possible schools, is educated, his mind is crammed with knowledge and information, some of which is of great service, no doubt, but a lot of it is directly opposed to spiritual teachings and spiritual consciousness. And also, it's a barrier rather than a help, because if a person's mind is developed on certain lines through certain education, it produces, by its very nature, prejudices. It builds up all sorts of things which do not help to make a clear channel. If someone has had no education because of their poverty-stricken parents, they have no firm, fixed, formed views or ideas to hinder the channel of divine inspiration. After all, that is exactly what happens with all the great teachers in the past, has happened with them in the past. Their minds have been open to receive. They're not cluttered up with strong preconceived notions and ideas instilled into them by their parents and their teachers. They may, of course, have a religious background, particularly in the ancient times. The minds of the young were crammed, it's true, with religious convictions and instructions, but again, basically, although there are many things that were added which were unimportant, the basic structure of all the teachings were very similar. I mean, Christ was brought up in an orthodox sense, no doubt, I'm sure, as a Jew, but the point is that his mind was not full of all isms and strong, hard convictions and opinions. His mind was flexible, and of course he had this divine inspiration and this wonderful contact with God. I think if people could only realize how the great prophets, by the very simplicity of their nature, opened up the channels which made it possible for truth to infiltrate itself through them to the world. And because of the strong convictions they had, and the knowledge, and also the power which they possessed of a spiritual and psychic nature, that they were able to demonstrate their beliefs. You see, today, in your world, there is no one that really practices in the same way, is able to give the same conviction, to prove their point or prove their knowledge to the extent that the great prophets did. The Church, of course, does not do this. It makes no attempt even to do it, to prove, as Christ did, his knowledge. Christ was able to perform what the world now terms miracles, which were not miracles to him, they were miracles to his disciples and the people who witnessed them, because they didn't realize and understand them. But Christ understood natural law. He understood the power that was there, which could be commanded and used, which is still there, which has always been there. If only people realize the tremendous vitality that exists, or the power that exists in the ether, which, when you understand laws, natural and spiritual, you are able to produce what appears to be a miracle. But to people like the Christ, these things were normal, natural things. And they were given to him under guidance, great souls from the realms of spirit, who were acting. He was always surrounded by spirits of a high order, and he was able to draw wisdom, knowledge, and power from them, that he was always able to do the things which his disciples and others felt were miraculous. But these things are not miraculous in the sense that people think. Christ could walk on the waters, Christ could raise the so-called dead. Because, you see, as you should know, when a person is dead to all outward appearances, it's not necessarily so in the fullest sense of the term. Sometimes it takes several days for the spirit to sever itself from the body. And if that cord, which links the two together, is still intact, there is the possibility, under certain conditions, for that person, even if it's only temporary, to be brought back to life. And indeed, there are many instances I know where this has happened, where people on the verge of burial have found to be still alive. This isn't a miracle. This is something to do with the natural law. Until that cord between the spirit and the physical body is completely broken, until the spirit is free from the auric emanation of the body, until it is completely broken away, there's always the possibility that the individual is not fully dead in that sense, dead to the material body and dead to the material world.
Yeah.
That's why it's never a good thing for burial to take place too suddenly, or cremation. At least 4 or 5 days should elapse.
Yes, yes. I believe we sometimes come back as a different sex. Do you remember a female incarnation?
Oh, yes, well, of course, that is quite more. I mean, it's pretty obvious that it must be so.
Yes.
I mean, sex by its very nature is purely coincidental. I mean, indeed, in a sense, I know this sounds rather absurd on the face of it, there's no such thing. But of course there is. That is, purely on a material basis, one can say, oh, this is a man and that's a woman. But it isn't as easy as all that. The whole thing is so complex that from the physical point of view, apart from the mental and the spiritual, and of course one has come back into the material body as a different individual and a different sex. And you see, there's so much placed on this business of sex. There's so much placed on this attitude of mind towards the body, whereas in a sense the body is the least important thing. It's important that one should take care of it and so on, but it is purely coincidental whether you're male or female. It is what you are inside, what you are as an individual spirit, what you have accomplished, what you have become, what lessons you have learned and so on. Yes, of course I've been female.
Yes, do you remember one at all?
Oh, I had a female incarnation, and I believe it must have been the last material incarnation in France in the 18th century.
Ah, yes.
Why do you say yes like that?
Well, I was there at that time in a corner. I know that. I think that is the time that I have been told of, and I can partly remember.
Well, I was evidently a person of some position and wealth. And I suppose it was important that I should learn certain lessons, because I was very much caught up in the French Revolution, although I suppose I was fortunate enough, if I can use the term fortunate enough, to escape the consequences of the revolution. In other words, I was not guillotined. I was able to get away into Austria,
oh,
on the very verge of, you might say, the catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate,
yes.
But I had been very much attached to the court. I knew the royal family intimately and well.
Yes.
And I'd had links with, actually by birth I'd been an Austrian, although I lived in Paris because I married a Frenchman.
Yes.
And I had several children. But I can see now that there was a point and a purpose in my being in France, and learning the lessons that I learned, because I was brought in contact with people, and mostly, of course, it's true in the upper classes, but I'd always had great sympathy for the poor, and what I could do to help the poor, I did. Indeed, I think I can say that I did much more than most for that age and day when it was quite a common thing to accept poverty. I mean, one thought it was something that nothing much could be done about, but I always felt something should have been done. In fact, I'd had many discussions with Marie Antoinette on this, although she had little time for poverty. Something she didn't really know anything about.
Yeah.
And I used to try to draw her attention to this, and I always said that it could well be that at some time, owing to the situation and poverty, so on, that something could happen. I never dreamed of anything so drastic as a revolution, but I always felt that something should be done. Otherwise, who knows what might transpire if the people got out of hand. Of course, I wasn't by any means perhaps as helpful as I might have been. I certainly did what I could, certainly much more than many of the people in the position that I was at the time. But I was very fortunate because although I say I escaped, I only escaped by accident rather than design, because it just happened that I had gone to Austria only a few days, started on my journey to Austria only a few days before the revolution broke out, and of course I was safely across the border at the time it happened. And of course, naturally, hearing what had happened in France, I didn't return.
Yeah.
I'd be foolish to have done so.
Yes.
But I mention this because it's of interest.
And yes, very
I probably wouldn't have mentioned it if you hadn't reminded me or asked me about this business, had I been a woman.
Yes, very, very interesting.
Well, her children died very young, as indeed was quite a common thing in those days.
Yes.
There was very little medical attention and knowledge. I had three children. One lived at 16, the other two died in infancy.
Fancy your remembering details like that, dear. It's wonderful, isn't it?
You and I have been very much associated. But you see, the point is this. I think it's so important for people to realize that although there are many, many instances of people coming together again and again through generations of time, through rebirth, under different circumstances, one must never place too much on the physical aspect or the material aspect. One should realize that although there are individual souls who are brought together over and over again, and they are, in a sense, you could say, twin souls, what is important is the spiritual progression that is made by those individuals over time itself. And there are people who say, oh, I don't like the idea of reincarnation and having to come back and perhaps meet some other man and marry another man or another woman, as the case may be. But you see, we don't put any stress or attach too much importance to the purely physical side. What is important is that we can only hope to reach any real height of spiritual attainment or achievement when we have gone through many, many different conditions and phases of life, when we have become this and when we have become that, even if it's only temporary on earth in a material body. We must see the earth body and the earth life for what it really is. The earth bodies in themselves are but the caskets that hold the soul, that hold the individual spirit that is ever advancing and experiencing, and that the material world is a school in which we must learn these lessons. We are merely the pupils, and we move from class to class according to our evolution and development. And if we do not learn all that is necessary in one class, then we cannot go into a higher class. We still have to stay on, or go back on the next term, as it were, to the same class. And, of course, sometimes we have to remember that the teachers that when during that particular period we had thought were excellent teachers may in themselves not necessarily always be so. In other words, we sometimes, in our desiring to return and learn certain lessons and experiences, it's true that we may well learn some of those lessons and those experiences may be given to us, but we may also be unfortunate to be in contact with bad teachers, even on earth, you see. And it's possible that we can be misled and we realize that not that the effort that was made to return and experience a new life was wasted, but we still haven't learned some of the lessons that were necessary, and we return again, perhaps very shortly. You see, time itself is an illusion. Sometimes one may have to wait hundreds of years as one returned time before returning. Another occasion it may almost be rebirth, a matter of moments, hours. This business of time is always problematic.
Yes.
And one must always realize to a great extent it is an illusion. Of course, it's very vital and very important when you're on Earth, the same as the physical body is important, and one must care for it, the same as many of the things that may happen. They are vital and important, even though they sometimes seem trivial. Indeed, one might almost say that some of the things that happen to one on Earth that seem, on the surface, the most trivial are most sometimes the most important. And those things which sometimes seem most important and most trivial, we must remember that if we are to achieve anything, or we are to advance as spiritual beings, we must experience all manner of things, good, bad, and indifferent. We cannot live and experience and progress only by knowing good. We must also know bad. We must almost certainly make mistakes. We must sometimes even do things which is wrong. But it's only when we have remorse and we look back and see the chaos that has been created by our foolishness or our waywardness that we learn and we desire again to return, to make good and to know what it is to do the right thing, whereas previously we may have often done the bad thing. These things are not by design or by accident, these things that happen to us. I'm not suggesting by that everything is preordained, otherwise it would be pointless. But what I am trying to say is that though we are given free will, we cannot, by our own nature or desiring, necessarily always do the right thing. Sometimes the very circumstances of life and the very conditions and even the peoples that we meet and the peoples that we know and even our parentage and so on and our teachers, well, many things can create circumstances where we are forced into a situation where we cannot see clearly and we make mistakes and perhaps we do wrong. I'm not excusing mistakes. I'm not excusing the wrongdoing that not only I, but every human being must make. But I am trying to clarify the position that we are all, you might say, travellers on the road of eternal progression. And each one of us must, by our very nature, make mistakes. People always saying this is wrong or that is wrong and how wicked that is. Of course these things, in a sense, are wrong. But if it were not for the wrong, we would never recognize the right. If it were not for the black, we wouldn't understand the purity of whiteness. In other words, we have got to accept the fact that we are all the time dealing with complexities and situations created by man himself. People are always saying, oh, why does God permit this? Why does God allow that? God does not interfere with his handiwork. God creates all things in the beginning that are good. But if man, by his foolishness and his waywardness, creates adverse conditions, then he must learn gradually through suffering and tribulation the right path and the right way, and build and rebuild and build again if necessary. I realize more and more the wisdom of life, but it is very difficult always to explain this wisdom in words.
Yes,
anyway,
I'm sure it is.
Over the years, I hope that I still left you. I have many opportunities to discuss many facets of this tremendous problem, this tremendous truth.
Yes.
But only remember that I can only tell you as much as I can, as best I can, of the prevailing circumstances.
You'll do marvellously,
anyway,
dear.
I must go, but all my love and bless you.
Thank you very, very
bye-bye,
much, dear.
God
it's wonderful.
Bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Goodbye, Mickey.
Very good, wasn't he?
Yes, wonderful.
He's very lucid. I think he's got a marvellous way of
yes.
delivering things, saying things. Would you like that on earth?
Yes, very. My only thought is...
Nearly a whole reel.
Has it all gone on?
No, you see, you've just got that little tiny bit...
Oh, what a blessing. All the time I had an awful feeling...